we're a credit union, and that's part of the mission, right? To meet people where they are. And we certainly want to have the channels available where anyone is at any given time.
Welcome to Friday Five with Dave Adams. Today, I'll be speaking with April Clovis, who is the CEO of MSU Federal Credit Union in East Lansing, Michigan. I think most of you know that MSU FCU is a very large university-based credit union. You may not know that they lay claim to being the largest university credit union in the world. The credit union has a culture of cultivating and exporting talent. They understand the member experience thoroughly, as evidenced by their 300,000 members, their $5.4 billion in assets, and over 900 employees. April joined the credit union 24 years ago in 1996, and she served as CEO since 2015. She personally and the credit union have received numerous awards. In 2013, she was named Top Woman to Watch by CU Times, and indeed, shortly after that, she was promoted to the CEO post. Awards from the Detroit Free Press for the credit union, the Athena Award from Lansing Chamber of Commerce. The credit union has been awarded the top workplace in the large employer category by the Detroit Free Press for 8 consecutive years. April serves on numerous boards and committees. And one thing I really enjoy hearing from April is her personal commitment and the credit union's commitment to supporting the credit union system, whether it's the state and national associations or at the local chapter level. We're going to have a great conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. Well, April Clovis, welcome to Friday Five. It's great to have you on.
Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, as the name suggests, this fun little conversation is about pitching 5 questions to different leaders from across our state. And I really look forward to the conversation with you. As I mentioned in the intro bio, MSU Federal Credit Union lays claim to being the largest university credit union in the world. And your assets are over $5 billion, 900 employees, 300,000 members. When I think of MSU Federal, I think of a long tradition of excellence that in my 23 years goes back to Pat McFarland setting a foundation. You worked with Pat, I think, for probably 23 or 24 years. And 5 years ago, you were appointed CEO. And my sense is that the credit union has an amazing culture for developing talent. And that, in turn, leads to great service for members and great success that you've had. But I wanted to start with a question about your career journey. So you're one of those lucky kind of mid-career rising stars who has had a great career and many, many accomplishments, but now you're poised to kind of take it to the next level. So why don't you just kind of share with us your thoughts on your career journey so far and kind of where you think things are headed?
Sure. So I have been at our credit union in October this year. It'll be 24 years. So my career journey really mostly has been at our credit union. And prior to working at the credit union, I did some jobs in marketing, but not in the industry at all. So for me, I was lucky. And as you kind of talked a little bit about, right, the place that I started is not the place we are today. You know, when I came to the credit union, we had about 100 employees, we were $400 million in assets. And, you know, the place today is very different. So I had a great opportunity, a really nice journey for my career, coming in at a smaller institution and being provided a lot of opportunity. So I started in marketing, from there, you know, ITs until our employees now. I'm so old that when I started, we didn't have the internet and, you know, we didn't have email. And when we did get a computer, we had to share, right? Like you had to share the computer because, you know, we couldn't get enough for everyone to have their own email. And so, you know, and you mentioned Pat McFarland. So Pat McFarland was a vice president when I started, but became about 5 years into my career the CEO of the credit union. He had lots of big ambitions for our organization, of which we achieved, I would say, almost all of them. And one of them was to place us on the internet. The university was becoming wired and everything was becoming more web-based, and we were not there. And so I, you know, raised my hand and said, I know how to do marketing on paper. I'm sure I could figure this out on the internet. So I started with our first website, no tech background, no any of that, as I think most people did. And then it grew into being departments that managed, you know, what we put online. So I had the opportunity to create everything we did online. So what our website looked like, how you could interact with it, the forms, the applications, the, you know, home banking channels, the messaging, all of that was something that I got to figure out how to do with my team. And so, you know, we during that time created our own home banking. So we don't use a vendor still to this day for our home banking or our mobile apps, because we had such great talent inside, and we took that opportunity. And at the time, you know, Pat really took a chance and approved us doing all that. So spent a lot of time in that area getting us what I would say online capable and ready. And then in 2009, I had the opportunity to move into back into the marketing field of the credit union. And so I kept my online teams and then incorporated marketing. And about a year later, Pat promoted myself and Tiffany Ford, who is the CEO at the U of M Credit Union, to be executive vice presidents. I joke, I don't know how Tiffany feels about it, but at the time we had really no idea that it was like we were being prepared to be a possible successor candidate for Pat. Pat obviously had a plan with our board that we didn't know about. I used to tease him and think he was getting old and tired and he needed some help. You can picture that we like to tease Pat a lot. And that, you know, for me, it was just an opportunity to take on more projects and work and really improve what the credit union was doing. So it was an exciting time that we had that chance, and Tiffany and I worked together in those roles for a little over a year and a half when she had the wonderful opportunity to move to the University of Michigan Credit Union as their CEO. And then it became for me a little more serious. Then Pat was like, well, we do have a plan, and now you're the last of my two choices to be an internal option for the board. And so I moved into the COO role. Started doing a lot more of the necessary work to be prepared for the CEO. And 2015 had the opportunity to move into the role because I tell everybody every day is a job interview, because I was interviewing for a couple of years with the board on and if I'd be able to step into that role. And so, you know, it's a brief version of my journey. I don't want to talk too long about it, but, you know, had lots of great opportunities to really explore what the credit union's operations were over my career before being placed as the CEO.
A couple of things struck me as you were talking, and I thought about one of them before this interview. The one I thought about before the interview was just how MSU Federal Credit Union and Pat McFarland in particular, and now you as the leader, you've cultivated talent and exported great talent to other credit unions. So you mentioned Tiffany Ford, Jeff Benson at Case Credit Union, and I'm sure many others. And so that speaks to your culture. The other thing that I thought of as you were talking, I had a kind of a similar experience, but in a much less impressive, smaller organization. When I started out at the Utah Credit Union League, early 80s, I make myself sound and look really old to my kids and grandkids when I tell them there was no email, there were no personal computers. Right. That all arrived in the 80s. Personal computers, networking of computers, the internet, email, it boggles their minds to think that none of that existed. And yet, right. I, like you, I remember making myself a bit more valuable because I was the one who figured out how to master the technology and help the small organization implement it. So that says something about your career journey. And that's what I wanted to ask you next. Valuable leadership lessons. As you're mentoring future leaders around you and you're talking to people who are aspiring to be a CEO, perhaps, what are some of the leadership lessons, some of the things you think are most important as people try to make the most of their careers?
Oh, goodness. So many come to mind. But first for me, and what I think has been very beneficial in our organization. Our employees comment on it, and I just kind of take it for granted that's who we are. Transparency, honesty is the, you know, best policy is still very legitimate for no matter what environment you're in. I think for us, especially maybe in the current times that we're in, the employees appreciate that we do town halls quarterly, that we share the financials, we talk about the challenges that we're facing, we talk about the opportunities we also have. But we really work to make sure that everyone understands the why behind what we do. And I think, you know, increasingly in our communities, and you see it very much socially, people want a full understanding of everything that you know, that you have access to, and the decisions and the data points that you have for making those decisions. And so we've really worked on transparency. So for me, I talk a lot about being authentic, being who you are. Don't try to model yourself after someone else. It never comes across as authentically you, and it doesn't seem very transparent. So I talk a lot about that. And the thing that I try to share that I think a lot of people in leadership positions expect of themselves is that, you know, you feel like you have to know all the answers. You know, when I got this job, it has a big title, but it didn't mean that I instantly became, you know, the knowledge source of all things, and that you still need, you know, to evaluate, you need to learn, and it's okay to tell people, I actually don't have a ready answer for you right there, but I can get one if you give me 24 hours and let me think things through, or let me go and get the information I need to make that. And I think
expand on that one a little bit, if you would, because I was going to ask a follow-up question. What's different with new school leadership versus old school leadership? Is that maybe one of them where you realize that you're not the hero leader that has all the answers? But what are your thoughts about what's different now in leading a large credit union versus maybe what it might have been 20 years ago?
Well, for certain, you know, as you phrase it that way, I mean, I think what's similar, but maybe the output may be different. What's similar is everyone thinks that you get the promotion or the job title you have because you know so much, right? And I think sharing with people when you don't know is part of my comments about being authentic and transparent. That's the expectation from people today, right? They appreciate that knowing you're more of a real person, just like them. But on the flip side of that, I do think the need for people to know immediately what the plan is really has changed, right? You don't always have the, you know, when something's published online, if you don't respond instantly, then that becomes worse, right? So there is the timeliness that I think is definitely sped up in today's environment and culture. I think a lot more need for information at a deeper level is from not only from our employees, but our members. I can, you know, certainly attest to, given the current social environment, I've had more than one member send me, you know, a questionnaire almost of tell me how you're handling the following social concerns. And what is your employee, you know, what is the makeup of your employees? What are your programs that you have for women and minorities? And what are those metrics? And what are you looking to improve? And so people are definitely holding leadership appropriately more accountable. And I think you have to know that and be ready to answer and to share what your values are and what you're doing for business.
Which is a great segue. I've watched MSU Federal Credit Union for 23 years. And in addition to your culture associated with acquiring and developing talent and so on, you really live the credit union difference. As a university credit union, you're serving students and past students, but also faculty. And I know you have other select employee groups, but talk about the credit union difference and what it means to you and what it means to MSU Federal Credit Union.
Yeah, so you know, I meet with all of our new hires each month. Now we're doing that via WebEx, but we did it in person in the past. And I talk a lot about the mission of our organization. And I know we have a great reputation as being a good employer. I know we have a great reputation of serving our community. But I talk about, I hope that you came here to work not only for those two parts of what you know, but that you actually want to do the work of the organization, and that our work is to help put people in a better financial position. And so if that doesn't align with what you thought this job would be, you know, you might want to reevaluate, because we're going to always focus you to the mission. We're going to make decisions that are in the best interest of members and employees and the community, but we really focus on our mission and our values to the membership and the community. So, you know, to me, it's very much providing products and services that are designed to put people in a better financial position, that we work with members, that we create new products and services to be advantageous to people's finances, that we are looking to help them in every way possible. We dedicate a full team to financial education programs in our community, from, you know, young people in schools to buying your first home to retirement. And so being that knowledge source to, again, help people be in a better financial position is really what we do. And then I would say the other way I interpret living the mission and being integral into our organization within the system of the credit union is really important to us as well. So, you know, we believe in supporting the different, league, the CUNA, to be involved and engaged, to support the foundation, because we all need to help each other and we all need to exist. And I know I'm representing a large credit union now, but we weren't always large, is what I tell everyone. And, you know, I still want to help everyone do the best that they can for their members. And if we can help somebody, or if we've done something, we can share that information. You know, we always want to do that. And I think that's what it makes the whole movement important, is that there are organizations of various sizes and service to different communities, and we can all still help and learn from each other. So I think that's been really important for us throughout my whole career.
I can attest to everything that you just described. To have a $5 billion credit union be active in the Capital Area Credit Union, all through my career, I've observed how MSU, FCU has been involved in the chapter, but your support for the trade associations and the different service providers that make up the credit union system. So I appreciate everything you just said. And I also, again, have a tremendous respect for the way that your credit union has stepped up during the toughest of times. I recall the housing-led recession and a TV interview that I participated in with your predecessor, Pat McFarland, talking about how MSU-FCU was stretching to help keep people in their homes and avoid foreclosure and serving all the extraordinary needs of that economy. And so now here we are in this COVID-driven recession, and I observe how MSU-FCU has been a leader. You personally have been a leader in making the Paycheck Protection Program loans and doing all the extraordinary things that your members demand in this environment. So let's pivot and let's talk. When we talk about leadership and running a credit union of any size today, what's different strategically? How are you approaching both what you see now as well as what you anticipate coming down the road in this economy?
Sure. Well, we've been doing a lot more financial modeling. Not that we normally don't, but it seems to be, you know, more monthly than it used to be. So we're planning for changing consumer behavior. So I think that's number one. And we're in a modified open state, of course, in our branches. The lobbies are open, not at full capacity, but, you know, we're seeing like 70% of volume in the branch compared to what this volume would have been last year. And that's pretty high given where we are, I think, in reopening. However, our online chat with a, you know, live agent is double what it was last year. That hasn't come down at all, even though the branch volume is picking back up. The call center calls are 30% increase. And so you know, we're having lots of conversations about what if branch volume returns to normal, but all of the remote service expectations still is elevated. You know, how will we continue to deliver the experience to the member in every channel that they want? And so we're certainly investigating that. We've made some decisions on new products and services. So one of the things that we're piloting right now is a video chat service, kind of like what we might be doing right now, for members who don't want to come into the branch, but need to do something there where they feel more comfortable face-to-face, or, you know, exploring electronic notaries. So we're looking to see what do we augment the branch interaction with digitally, so they can be a little closer aligned. So I think you have consumer behaviors, and then I think we have, you know, especially our organization, we have to do more with less resources, and how are we going to do that? And, you know, what are the efficiency projects we can do? What are some projects that we can do to, you know, reduce expenses, increase revenue? You know, which I
do
thought,
you think some of those consumer behaviors and expectations have changed permanently? Do you think that that's something that we're going to be dealing with?
I do. I think you saw more people utilizing some of the other delivery channels we've always had that didn't before. And now, but what I think is happening is that they're permanently going to use like online chat, but they're also still going to come visit the branch. That's what we're seeing, at least right now. And so, you know, we're not trading one delivery for another. And so that's what I think may ultimately give us a little bit of a challenge initially until we can adjust, you know, staffing levels and volume management, because I think, you know, you kind of expect if someone online chats you, then they don't need to call or they don't need to come to the branch. But instead they're going to pick up the phone when they need something immediate. They're going to online chat when it's not convenient to come to the branch. And then, oh, I'm going to go to the branch 3 days later to do X, right? Instead of consolidating all those, they're choosing the channel that's convenient for the moment that they have that need. And I think
so
that just comes. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. So the omni-channel service delivery is going to continue to be very important, but in some ways, is there a silver lining because the COVID recession kind of has pushed people to realize that they can get most of their service needs met remotely. So that's a positive, right?
Yes, I think it is a positive. But despite that, you know, we have, you know, lots of people still coming in to drive up lanes, and you know. Yeah. Having people explain, you could have done this on your mobile app. Well, I'd rather not, you know, and so it's, I think we're a credit union and that's part of the mission, right? To meet people where they are. And we certainly want to have the channels available where anyone is at any given time. And they may now know how to use more. And so we'll be there, whichever channel they want to use. And I think that's going to only grow as we implement, you know, video chat and more ways that they can interact with us.
So April, before I go on to the last question that is a little bit more on the personal side, so get ready.
Okay.
Before I go on to that, when we exchanged emails, you mentioned that I think I recall that the credit union grew deposits and assets by well over 10% just since March, $600 million of deposit growth. I talked to a smaller credit union CEO, coincidentally, yesterday, who had their CAMEL rating downgraded because their capital to asset ratio is slipping so much because of the growth that that small credit union was having. So how are you approaching that? Any credit union hates to turn members away when they're looking for a safe haven or a little bit of yield. They don't want to put their money in the stock market, or they can't get yield in the bond market. So you don't want to chase some money away, but it's coming in at a pretty rapid pace. So how are you approaching that?
Yeah, that's been our ongoing conversation. So, you know, we our net worth has been well over 10% historically, and that's helped us. And so we talk a lot about why we save for rainy days. And this would be an example of needing, you know, to have that cushion for the capital requirement, because we have just what you said. I mean, I tell the team, you know, so a year ago we were 97% lent out, right? Like, so loan to share, you know, at any given point was at the, you know, where we may not have had enough on deposit. And so you know, I tell the employees that we're here to take care of the members when they need us, for whether it's they're going to bring their savings, there's great loan demand. We have a brilliant CFO and finance team, and that's their job then to help manage the other side, because they don't want the employees to start discouraging members to do business with us. Because in the future, when we need deposits, they're not going to think of us because we turn them away. And so we really try to manage through it to the best of our ability. So, you know, we evaluate different investments that might be able to earn us more. Big focus, of course, to catch earnings up to the asset growth. And how do we do that? And some of it was, like most people, we did some expense reductions this year to try to increase the net income to make sure we can maintain the capital ratio that we need. And for the honest truth is we just manage the organization during the times it gives us in the economy that we have, knowing the strengths that we've been able to build on, right? So in the other parts, we built up capital so we can weather something like this. And when this turns, we'll be going back into capital building, right? Like everyone has a capital management plan right now that I think they're really working to execute.
That's really well said. We don't have the luxury of deciding what our members want from us, right? So in this environment, they want a safe place to put their money and get as much yield as they can. And so as much as it is a challenge, it's also what some might say is a good problem to have, that consumers, that members find credit unions so attractive right now. And it's just a matter of planning and navigating through that, because there are issues that come with that. So outside of work, what are your personal loves and passions? I know you like to travel, but tell us a little bit about the things you like to do outside of work.
Sure. What I found during the pandemic is I think my top interesting things to do are not available. And you mentioned travel. I love going to like Broadway and performances, live music. So all of that is off the table. So you can see behind me, I do enjoy reading. I've been working really hard to spend some more time reading. I seem to accumulate, I want to read this book and don't have time more than not these days.
If you had to pull one of those books off the shelf to recommend to us, which would it be? And I hope it's not macroeconomics.
I do have some of those, including Nudge. so, you know, I will recommend two books. One that would be a leadership book that's called The Trillion Dollar Coach. I really thought that aligned with how we handle leadership in our organization. And then a fiction book that I really love is called Bel Canto, B-E-L-C-A-N-T-O by Ann Patchett. So Ann Patchett's one of my favorite authors. Actually, she's been nominated for the Pulitzer this year for her latest book called The Dutch House, but I enjoy her books quite a bit. So lots of good stuff though.
I've been able to read. How about one Broadway show, if you had to pick one to recommend?
That's a tough call. My friends would laugh because they know I go see Mamma Mia whenever I can, but that's because it's like fun and it incorporates like music that I, you know, for me. But I've seen some incredible performances in the last couple of years. I enjoyed Hamilton, but I don't know that I'd put it on my number one to go see. But we've seen, stretch on that one. I would say.
You tend toward the musical shows like Mamma Mia a little bit more, Jersey Boys.
Yep. Chorus Line, you know, things that have good music. Yeah. I tend to like, but you know, I've seen some great performances of plays and, you know, things. I like to go see obscure stuff. Like I've seen a play called Nine in New York that, you know, was kind of dark and no one probably saw, and it was open for 2 weeks, right? But you know, one of my favorites was seeing Audra McDonald perform Lady Sings the Blues. Like that was an incredible performance in New York. So
I'll put again, that one on though, my list.
Yeah, again though, I guess as I think about it, it comes back, it's music focused. So
yeah, well, you have a wonderful venue in your backyard there at the Wharton Center.
Yeah.
And I share the passion for New York City and Broadway. And we hopefully we'll be back to where we can take advantage of those venues soon.
Yeah, I had lots of shows that I have tickets for and moved into 21 now. So hopefully that'll come to fruition at some point.
Well, April, thank you so much for the conversation. I'm sure that everybody who takes the time to listen to this conversation will find it informative and helpful. I certainly have. And it's given me some added insights into what has made you successful and what makes the credit union successful. Congratulations on the success so far, and wish you the best as we all work together to navigate through the challenges that we have in this environment. Thanks for being on with me.
Thank you. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, the conversation with April Clobes, CEO of MSU Federal Credit Union, certainly did not disappoint. I really appreciated the way that April explained her career journey and how she started off with her academic training in marketing and advertising, and yet the practical experience she had at the credit union had to do with technology and implementing new remote service delivery tools. And certainly as she became CEO, she continued the legacy that that credit union has had of attracting and cultivating and even exporting great talent. Talent that understands the credit union mission and the importance of excellent service delivery. I appreciated the emphasis on transparency, honesty, and communication. And that CEOs need to realize, new age CEOs need to realize that it's not possible to have all the answers. And in fact, it's good to show some vulnerability and to let your team know that it truly does take a group effort to address the challenges and opportunities ahead. It was a great conversation, and we look forward to many more. If you have an interest in being on Friday 5 with Dave Adams, please let us know.